From the land of Grand University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of September 2017. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. We'll check in on the agricultural news for the day, get an update on a couple of new pork processing plants, one in Sioux City, Iowa, and one in Michigan, and how they'll impact hogs and the price of pork in the United States. And as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast, too. That with Mark Russo at Risk Pulse out of Chicago, Illinois, right here on this Monday edition of our program from Illinois Public Media. It's Public Radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, of course, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Monday afternoon. We're now joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Hey, Kurt, first things first, tomorrow evening, looking forward to having you and Bill Mayer and Chip Nellinger all here in Champaign at the County Farm Bureau building. That's the U of I Extension building out there on the west side of town. It's on Country Fair Drive. Everybody should come out because tomorrow's USDA report day, and it's the month of September, so those numbers are doing well. We're looking forward to seeing what they have to say and kind of reaction that you guys will have tomorrow night.
Boy, we always enjoy participating in those outlook meetings, and got a Class A panel there, Todd.
There you go. Well, I hope everybody comes out. They're not quite ready to be harvesting yet. I think, and you'll probably have better information than I. Maybe this week sometime a few guys will start to stick their headers into the corn, maybe some soybeans too, and get some early crops harvested, you think?
Yeah, we saw a little activity last week. Pete has one customer down at Mount Carmel. It's only 35 acres, but he indicates his best corn yield ever. I think he just hit it right in that particular field. But, Indiana, we're here in 168, 207. There's one guy had 170, and his, usually he's around 220. Here in McLean County, we got one guy that was estimated to be about 180, 185. It's actually better than what he thought, pushing 200. It's still kind of wet, about 26, 27 percent moisture. So there's some corn activity out there. We'll have more and more reports as we move forward here. The only bean number was from Wayne from last year. It was a field over there. Near Crawfordsville, I believe, they were expecting 60 bushels per acre. It came in 50 bushels per acre. So a lot of beans will start to go here midweek. One observation, guys are saying fungicide paid off to put that on this year. So we'll see if that trend holds true as we move into the week. Of course, the big report tomorrow. Corn yield, the average guess is 168.2. That's down 1.3 bushels from last month. In return, that's going to probably lower ending stocks 100 million bushel. Wide range of expectations on the yield and ending stocks, so it'd have to be a shocker either side to be outside that range. Maybe not eventful. Bean yield expected to be about 48.8 bushels to the acre. That's down about half a bushel to the acre. Bean ending stocks expect to come in about 444 million bushel. That's down about 30 million bushels from the August report. So we'll see where the numbers fall and kind of go from there. World numbers. The key there is to see if these world wheat numbers stay lofty, particularly Russia. They're expected to increase their overall wheat production by about 5 million metric tons. Corn world ending stocks expected to be lower, about 7 million metric tons from a year ago. And the bean ending stocks expected to be up about 1 million metric tons from a year ago. We'll start to monitor new crop production in the southern hemisphere. And it kind of follows suit what you said down at the Farm Progress show there. They're not seeing a big increase in South America bean production compared to a year ago there. But we don't have that crop in the ground yet, and that's yet to be traded here as we go through the winter months, Todd.
So we have a lot of time yet, and we have this report coming up. The October numbers, of course, will be out too. That'll be about the time we really get a good handle on the report. We'll have some harvest, quite a bit of harvest done by the time that one comes through. You think USDA, given where the crop report shows we've been so far in maturity, will have very many objective yields that they can deal with in terms of weighing ears and getting a pretty good handle on the size and yield of the corn crop in the United States?
Well, I believe it's a start. The South has been going here fairly strong. You know, Texas, Louisiana, Alabama, portions of Missouri. So we'll see what they come up with. This is a moving target. We're going to have a crop. You know, it's just how big. And as everyone has indicated, we're going to be talking about this clear into January. It's not beyond that. But also, too, the demand was a little bit better as we finished up the marketing year, too. So there's a lot of moving targets. This is not going to be bullish enough to make up some big gains to the upside to get caught up on marketing, per se. But I think when you look at these numbers and we get through tomorrow, we're in a situation where we're in search or hunt of a fall low here. And confirmation that could be here as we move into October.
Of course, we always talk about at this time of the year the crop production reports being due out, but if naturally the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates or the WASDE supply and demand figures are released at the same time. You mentioned demand. Will that eat into the carry over for this year's corn crop, and how much of a change might we expect?
Well, we feel so. The end users got their last batch of easy grain being bought here on August 31st like they did a year ago. I don't know if there's going to be a whole lot move here as we go into early harvest, unless there's some increase in flat price. Basis continues to be wide. I think that's going to improve as we move forward. But plenty of livestock numbers. I think this export demand is going to remain relatively strong. The fear would be if we continue to lose our percentage of export share. But this morning shipments were strong. We shipped out 1 million metric tons of beans, 446 million metric tons of wheat, and over 662 million metric tons of corn. So this is the start of the marketing year. September 1 is the new benchmark for corn and beans, so we're off to a fairly good start there, Todd.
A couple of other items, and you can take up one or both of them if you would like. Crop progress report due out this afternoon. Do you have projections for it? And the other is livestock related. We had a couple of plants, and we'll hear this a bit later in the news, open. One in Sioux City, Iowa, pork processing, that is, and one in Michigan. And I suspect those have or will give a little bump to the price of hogs.
Yeah, that's been anticipated for some time, and that's welcomed. Overall hog numbers expected to go up here, but the slaughter capacity, that's going to help out a ton because we ran into that issue. And the thing short term is the two hurricanes, Texas and Florida. We'll see if that how that's interpreted here on overall meat consumption in general. But if the power's out, hopefully we'll have to restock some freezers. This afternoon's crop conditions report, corn expected to be unchanged from last week, 61% good to excellent. Corn harvested about 4% complete as a nation. The range is anywhere from 2 to 7%. Bean conditions expected to be 60% good to excellent versus 61% last week. Winter wheat planting is about 5%. That's a range of anywhere from 3 to 8 percent. So I don't know if that'll be a big market maker or not, but we'll see how those numbers fall in place here at 3 o'clock.
Hey, looking forward to seeing you tomorrow night.
Very good.
Kurt Kimmel is with Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois, and will join us tomorrow night along with Bill Merritt of Strategic Farm Marketing and Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri Marketing at the Champaign County Farm Bureau building. That's the U of I Extension building as well. On the west side of town, 7 o'clock for Will Ag Marketing Panel. It's open and free. I hope to see you there. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with crop insurance. The Government Accountability Office, or the GAO, is recommending Congress consider directing the Department of Agriculture to adjust the expected rate of return for crop insurance. In 2010, USDA negotiated with insurance companies to set a 14.5% target rate. According to GAO analysis, the reasonable rate of return declined, averaging 9.6%. Congressman Ron Kind, a Democrat from Wisconsin, says there's no reason to offer a 14% guaranteed rate of return.
It makes no sense for us in this program to be offering the private crop insurance companies a guaranteed 14% profit margin. We're not offering that to any other business.
He says additional changes need to be made to benefit farmers, changes included in a bill he is already proposing.
I'd also like to means test it a little bit more, so all the premium subsidy payments are not going to huge agribusiness. It ought to be there to be supporting family farmers and make it easier for them to afford the crop insurance coverage that they need. And that's exactly what my reform bill calls for that I've teamed up with Jim Sensenbrenner on. And this GAO report confirms what I've been saying the whole time. So I'm anticipating bipartisan support for these common sense changes to crop insurance while retaining this important program for our farmers.
And of course, as U.S. Representative Ron Kine, he's a Democrat from Wisconsin's 3rd District. As a reminder, we've heard the flip side of these arguments in recent weeks on the means testing, the idea that it takes a complete pool to be actuarially sound, and that would require all of the available acres and landowners to participate in the crop insurance program. As for the crop insurance companies and how they're paid, the 14.6% was an argument that was settled back in 2010. It's unlikely that that will go very far, even in the new Congress. Let's turn our attention now to dicamba. Monsanto is urging the state of Arkansas to reject a recommended ban on dicamba herbicide for use after the April 15th date. The Arkansas Plant Board and Governor Asa Hutchinson are considering the ban as the state has received near 1,000 complaints of alleged drift and misuse of dicamba herbicides. The company says the ban and others passed by the state don't stand on sound science and are influenced by bias. In a letter and petition to Arkansas, Monsanto writes, "While investigation of the 2017 reports is not complete, the available evidence establishes that Arkansas farmers can use low-volatility dicamba formulation safely and effectively to control resistant weeds." The Arkansas Plant Board will review the petition from Monsanto this week during its pesticide committee meeting, and then again on the 21st at the full state plant board meeting. By the way, the University of Arkansas's Division of Agriculture Research and Extension takes exception to Monsanto's characterization that sound science was not used to develop the potential ban. In a statement posted to the university's website last week, Dr. Mark Cochran noted that Dr. Jason Norsworthy's work was anything but an outlier and consistent with research work in other states, including that of Kevin Bradley at Missouri and Tom Mueller and Larry Steckel in Tennessee. And he went on to say that Monsanto's petition isn't just about a single herbicide, but it's an attack on a whole profession, scientists whose careful work is meant to be of benefit to all. By the way, you may read Cochran's full statement on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. Hey, don't forget that tomorrow USDA releases its crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimates at 11 o'clock a.m. Central Time. Check out the website, willag.org, for all the details there and for the updated numbers as they're released. Or you can just follow me on Twitter at Commodity Week. And then tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, I'll be joined by 3 panelists to take a look at the impact of those numbers. Bill Mayer will be there, Chip Nellinger, and Kurt Kimmel at the Farm Bureau building here in Champaign County. That's out on the west side of Champaign. It's the U of I Extension Building 2, right there on Country Fair Drive. Starts at 7. It's free and open to everybody. I hope you will drop by tomorrow evening to get your marketing plan in order before harvest really starts here in our part of the world. Now, up next, you know, two new pork processing plant facilities came online last Tuesday, and that should help stabilize cash hog prices. The Triumph Seaboard Foods plant is in Sioux City, Iowa, and the Clemens Food Group plant is in Coldwater, Michigan. Dr. Steve Meyer, Vice President of Pork Analysis with EMI Analytics, says initially this should have a positive market impact. However, Meyer doesn't expect a big rally in hog prices because both plants will draw on contracted production rather than competing aggressively in the spot market.
You know, I just don't see a lot of chasing out there when we're going to have 2.4 and 2.5 million head available every week in the marketplace. So I think we put some stability and some floor under it. I don't think it's going to be one of those runaway things, even you know, maybe some weeks it would be a couple of dollars, but I wouldn't rule that out. But I don't think it's going to be a huge boon to prices this fall just because we're going to have such big supplies.
He says when the plants are fully operational, they'll process about 22,000 head a day, which does represent the largest single increase in slaughter capacity in history.
Well, when they're full on single shift, the Sioux City plant says that they can run about 10,200 and about 12,000 on the plant in Coldwater, Michigan. So significant increase. I wrote in a column earlier this week, you know, this is a red letter day for the pork industry. We've never seen this big an increase in slaughter capacity in a year, much less in a day.
Meyer says the expansion by U.S. pork processors is a direct result of strong packer margins over the last few years. Let's check out the cash grain market now. Greg Johnson at the Andersons from right here in Champaign County joins us. Greg, thanks for being with us. Have you been getting any traffic there with some early harvest or not?
We haven't seen anything yet. We've heard a few people cutting beans this week. A few more will be ready later this week. Lots of hand-shelled samples of corn coming in. So maybe if we added it all up, we might have a third of a truckload or something with all the bucket loads coming in. But most of the corn still in that 27 to 37% moisture range. So it feels like we're still another week and a half away on the corn. And like I say, just a very few early planted beans are ready this week, it sounds like.
Our farmers, I know they're always anxious. Do they think their crops are in pretty good shape and ready to roll for the fall? And meaning, do they think they have the yield there or not?
I think in our area, we think we're down 10 to 15% on the corn. Beans, it's going to be hard, I would to guess, but I would guess we're probably down not quite as bad on beans, maybe 7 or 8% from last year. And you got to remember that last year were record type yields. So, you know, nobody likes to hear 10% less, but 10% of a big number. It's still an okay crop. It's probably going to be one of our bigger crops, but just not what we were hoping for. And with the lower prices, I guess we were hoping for either extra bushels to offset the price or a little bit better price to offset the so-so yield.
Well, that brings me to the USDA report tomorrow. I think the trade is at, what, 48.5 or 48.4 or something along those lines for the soybean size, maybe a little bit bigger than that. Are you expecting it to be that small?
No. In fact, I went back and did a little research, and over the last 30 years, the difference from the August report to the September report has not varied by more than 3 bushels on corn, except for 5 times. So 5 out of 30, that's a 16% chance that we're going to see a major move in the corn or bean numbers. And I guess that stands to reason, you know, with very little harvest activity actually taking place yet to base that off of, they're going to go off of the same formula that they used in August. And so, you know, I'm guessing the numbers that come out tomorrow will be pretty close, if maybe a little lower, but pretty close to where we were in August.
That, of course, is Greg Johnson. He is with the Andersons from right here in Champaign County. Now let's take a look at the weather forecast. Mark Russo is here from Risk Pulse out of Chicago. Hey, Mark, thanks for being with us. I guess the war room, I think that's what you call it, is probably settling down a bit there.
Yeah, the tropics, tropics are hyperactive, bottom line. Now we're seeing Irma weaken, but you know, Jose is on our minds right now, and certainly a storm to watch here in this hyperactive mode of the Atlantic tropical season. As it looks right now, and the reason why we need to watch Jose is that Jose will be meandering across the Atlantic as we go through this week and kind of stalling out, actually doing a little bit of a loop-de-loop here. And by the end of the week, starting to drift a little bit closer to the west here, closer to the east coast of the U.S. And so as it looks right now, we would place odds of Jose impacting the eastern U.S. at approximately 25%. And that those odds then increase to 35% when you include eastern Canada. We're watching some of the latest computer model guidance coming out that is showing a few more runs beginning to drift things a little bit more to the west. So those odds may be starting to increase. And so, again, we think overall that it's still more likely than not for Jose to not impact the U.S., but stay out in the Atlantic. But certainly a storm to keep an eye on here.
So the remnants of Irma will be making their way to the northwest. Who will get rainfall and how much? And are there many agricultural production areas that can get wet?
Well, yeah, the southeastern U.S. is taking the brunt of Irma here, obviously from a wind and then from a rainfall standpoint, which is now what Irma is basically. And Midwest looks to miss out by and large with a significant precip here, especially since the Midwest, especially the central and eastern Corn Belt, has been the driest area, one of the driest areas in the country here over the past 4 to 6 weeks. And so rainfall amounts in the southeast, 5 to 10 inches, localized heavier amounts. Some of those areas have also been on the dry side of late. So there'll likely be some river flooding, but not a major flooding event for the southeast, since Irma's remnants will not be stalling out.
Have you been watching other areas of the globe that produce crops, and are there concerns?
As of right now, the main concerns are in eastern Australia, with continuation of drier than normal conditions and cooler than normal readings. Also across Ukraine, continued dryness looks to persist during the second half of September. That's an area to watch with upcoming winter wheat planting. One area that we don't have any concerns right now is Brazil, and we do see a timely start to the rainy season across Mato Grosso, which by about September 15th, we start to see some of the first planting of corn and soybeans. And as of right now, we think everything is a green light for Brazil here coming up.
Hey, thanks so much, Mark. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
My pleasure, Todd.
That, of course, is Mark Russo. He is with Risk Pulse from Chicago, Illinois. He joins us on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.